Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Welcome to the Raw Review. I'm Adam Wilborn from What Culture, joined by the Dudley Boys of What Culture, Michael Hamflett and Michael Sidgwick, here to review everything that happened on last night's episode of Monday Night Raw. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on either iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts where we not only review Raw, but also SmackDown, NXT 2.0, AEW Dynamite, AEW Rampage, pay-per-views, or premium live events, whatever they're bloody calling them nowadays. We have interviews, roundtable discussions, and a roundup that we complete with a bloody good quiz, of course, on WrestleCulture. As I said, they're joined by Hamflett and Sidgwick to review Monday Night Raw and another good show? Question mark?
Big question mark. I thought this was mostly trash. Like, a couple of things are liked. WWE, this is the absolute nailed on certainty for WWE between now and WrestleMania, is that at least once a week, a storyline will probably have your investment, will probably have your interest. Gone are the days where you could say something like, oh, they don't piss about when it comes to WrestleMania season, because they absolutely do. Mm-hmm. This whole company is one big piss about. But as it hangs in the distance, as it literally will from Royal Rumble onwards, they do sort of keep their eyes on the prize. And there's a couple of things we'll get to in this that we've like credit them for in the past. This is not just out of the blue stuff. But there are a couple of things here where you can see, right, they are actually focused on WrestleMania. That's nice. You're allowed to invest in that at this point. And then a lot of it was Raw. A lot of it was Raw. Way more Raw this week than there has been the last couple.
Mixed bag is probably the nicest way of putting it.
Uneven represents the very nicest thing you can possibly say about any WWE show, other than those really drab 6.5 out of 10 pay-per-views that people go absolute wank daft over. Piss off.
2 hours 20. That's the, you're looking at the runtime before you're looking at the card.
I never thought I would say this, right? I'm going to make a non-biting comparison between WWE Raw and AEW Dynamite.
Wow.
Because this, in a weird, warped way, mirrored last week's, where I thought the first 35 minutes of this are the best this company can do. Mm. Obviously, the one's great and one's merely quite good, that. But the very best this company is capable of, you kind of saw it in the first 40 minutes, as you did last week's Dynamite, which is something I never thought I would say. Everything else is pretty much rubbish.
Mm, yeah, well, let's get straight into it then. Brock Lesnar comes out to start the show. There's a big recap, not only of his win at day one, but of course, Bobby Lashley becoming the number one contender the previous week. Paul Heyman joined Brock Lesnar out there, of course. And we cut backstage before they say a word to see Lashley watching on alongside MVP on a monitor when who should sidle up next to them. Then Cedric Alexander and Shelton Benjamin. The Hurt Business are a thing again, I think. Very briefly, he says, oh, it's great to have the team back together. And Lashley goes, what on earth are you talking about? I work alone, piss off. MVP nods along, and we cut back to the ring. Lesnar's very jazz.
Sorry, before we get to this, just in case I forget this thing that happened and I saw with my own eyes, let's extrapolate this before we analyze the content of the promo. What's happened here, right, is that over the course of what, a month, 2 months, off and on, because it kind of happened, then got dropped, like time has lost all meaning. Cedric Alexander and Shelton Benjamin, without actually consulting with Bobby Lashley, have simply put on the t-shirts and thought, will this work? If we just put on these t-shirts, will this somehow convince Lashley and MVP that, you know, Well, we're wearing the T-shirts. It must be true. Is that their thought process here?
I think
tell me what it could be.
So they reconciled.
Together, the two of them.
As the Hurt Business for the Goldberg program. Do you remember that?
No.
Right. So they came.
Oh, yeah. They got chucked all over the place. I'm
not misremembering this.
In Saudi,
sort of came back together because MVP was panicking that Goldberg was going to back Bobby Lashley. So it was like, Hurt Business, everything's fine again. And Twitter rejoiced because, like, finally, WWE realizing it's making mistakes. New boom period. AEW in the mud. And they were together for 1 week. And that was it. Like, Goldberg beat Lashley. And that was that. So these are those. This isn't even like the friends that you kind of only really keep tabs with on WhatsApp. There's not even a WhatsApp group anymore. There's no, like, Bobby Lashley archived that shit straight after the Saudi Arabia lost to Goldberg. And then they've just walked back in, Hurt Business shirts. Hey, we were never apart.
I have a bigger issue with what came later.
So the company hasn't been formally dissolved. It's just one of those things where, and I've got experience in admin, right? So you would be like trying to chase like a payment from a small company.
Yeah.
And it's some guy in the shed or like they're at it, like having ran a failed business essentially, but they're still on company's house. They've still got like all the details up and like the status. Some other admin guy, a company's house hasn't really been quick on the draw updating the company status. So it still says like active or something. So you think, what's going on here? So Bobby Lashley has simply forgot to update company's house.
That's what it is.
And Benjamin and Alexander are simply on it going, oh, still active?
they've not even got a landline anymore. It's just forwarding to somebody's mobile.
That'd be an office space where they just say, should we just stop paying him and then hopefully we'll stop turning up at work? It's like they've not sent any like limos or honeys to go to Cedric and Shelton's house to pick them up before the show, but they've gone... Well, I guess they must have just forgotten. So we'll get an Uber, wear the T-shirts and call it a day.
So you're telling me that in the Hurt Business, right, there are two separate individuals involved in this company who don't have a clue what the other one's doing and it's creating confusion. Mm. It's way more like a business than you'd ever imagine.
Yeah, we'll talk also about their actions a little bit later on because I've got a question about that. Anyway, so Lesnar's very jazzed once again by Paul Heyman's introduction. He's happy. He's in a great mood. He's excited to be back in Philadelphia. They love him. Before he can continue, though, out come MVP and Lashley. And Lashley says that they're both super athletes. It's an honor to finally share the ring with Brock Lesnar. But Brock Lesnar, he says, has also been ducking him for 20 years. And Lesnar responds by saying, it's kind of busy over those years winning championships in this ring and in other rings. I'll be honest, I didn't even know you were until we met at day one. It's not my fault that you didn't climb the ladder enough to reach me at the top. And he's again, very jolly, Lesnar. He's in a bit of a joking mood. And he says, but look how well-dressed these two gentlemen are, eh? What's the thread count on one of those, MVP? And they're all yucking it up. And he says, oh, yeah, I'm funny and money. And Lashley's obviously getting very annoyed by this. And Lesnar just keeps going, calls Heyman over, and he does a knock-knock joke, which Heyman responded, I think all of us did. Well, never thought I'd see Brock Lesnar doing a knock-knock joke, or should I call it a Brock joke?
No.
Okay.
I knew you would.
he says...
piece of trash.
Knock-knock.
Who's there?
Bobby.
Bobby who?
Exactly. That's show business, ladies and gentlemen. He calls Lashley a Brock Lesnar wannabe and chuckles and walks out. And thankfully, they don't touch. I like the fact that they didn't touch, first of all. But my issue came not only with this, like you say, prior to the meeting, which is wear the T-shirts and assume that the band are still together. It's also the idea of Cedric Alexander going to Shelton Benjamin. Well, guess that's the end of the Hurt Business, eh, Shelton? You know what we should do? Lashley looks really pissed off now that Brock Lesnar sort of mugged him off on telly, and he hasn't really let it out on anyone. I think this would be a good time to jump him. That's what they did, and he just wrecked them around ringside.
They've spent more time getting wrecked by Bobby Lashley than they have being in the same stable as him. An absolutely unbelievable state of affairs that kind of ruined what was a conditionally good segment.
Mm.
Away from the content of the promo, away from the fact that the content of this promo only really works if one result actually happens, and if it doesn't go that way, it's the wrong approach to take. it felt big time. Yes. We talk a lot about analysis versus feeling. This felt big time. I've said for ages, what have they got other than Roman versus Brock that could feasibly feel remotely WrestleMania worthy? And they're doing it. It just happens to be happening at the Royal Rumble. This felt like a big, big major stakes deal, a big title fight with loads of gravity and just loads of presence and loads of star power. I felt better watching this unfold than I would have had I really paid attention to the verbiage. Because when I did, I realized that it's all well and good for Brock Lesnar to basically say what a lot of people have said about Bobby Lashley throughout his career. Mm-hmm. You look like Brock Lesnar, you do the same things as Brock Lesnar, in that you wrestle and you do MMA, but one's Bellator, one's UFC, essentially, mm-hmm. is the big divide. They brought attention to it, as I kind of suspected yesterday they would. But if Bobby Lashley goes over, and I don't think he is, and it will be through interference, this might just work. If Brock's going over, you've just ruined Lashley, and you've just invited and made real a quite unfavorable comparison. I have no hope for any future, right? Not least of which involving WWE's future, but I kind of was into this all the same.
Yeah, I really like this as a first face-off between the two of them, and I know this generally works better when Brock's the bad heel that he used to be, but Lesnar taking people lightly and then them doing something like Joe choking him out before Great Balls of Fire, for example, is great. And you've already got in people's minds, you might not have got out of that Hurt Lock had someone else not got involved at day one.
Yeah, it offered up some interesting speculation, if nothing else, this. Brock, as you say, with Joe, and I'm reminded of the electric Rey Mysterio attack as well, when he didn't take them seriously and Rey absolutely battered him. Was it like a baseball bat or something?
Yes,
it wasn't
I think
it was something more interesting than
I just remember thing. Dominic Mysterio being thrown into a wall.
Yeah, absolutely incredible stuff.
Thought you might.
There's the chance of that with Brock here. They did well to have Brock kind of like cynically undermine Bobby Lashley without turning him full heel. This feels like it's sort of, especially because Bobby Lashley is pivoting to this babyface role as well. It's transcending heels and babyfaces, but in a non-patronizing way, in a way that feels intended rather than when WWE, because you just hate everybody. Like an episode of NXT where it's impossible to discern who the good guy and the bad guy is. This is the good version of that because it feels ultra competitive. Bobby Lashley won't take that. Ultimately, the Royal Rumble, Brock Lesnar, even if Bobby Lashley loses, Brock Lesnar will be made to suffer for these comments at some point, and you can kind of rely on that as well. Mm. And I also love that in Vince McMahon's warped mind at this point, Brock Lesnar goes out and does that knock-knock patter, and then on SmackDown on Friday, Vince just looks at Madcap Moss and says, see, same script, why can't you do that? Why aren't you like him? It's exact same sort of patter. And just not being able to discern the difference between the two. Again, I was slightly worried at what I saw here with the likes of the Hurt Business silliness, and maybe I think they've probably forgotten that Bobby Lashley's beaten the Hurt Business in a handicap match before, and they're gonna run it back assuming that people love this as a diversion while Brock's not on TV. They've just forgotten they've already done it.
Who can throw Cedric Alexander the furthest?
I wonder how many angles from the last 2 or 3 years specifically they could recycle, and even like we've covered every one of these, and even we would be like, yeah, it's nice to see these two together, isn't it? Like, I don't know how they've kept them apart so long. It's because they haven't. They were together in 2020. I wouldn't put it past them to do that.
No. Right, next up, we got the Raw Tag Team title match. Prior to that, Riddle comes up to Randy in the back. Orton's not happy about their non-title loss last week, and he says that the fault was Riddle's because he never tagged him in, and he writes, tag in Randy on Riddle's hands.
Could have been to use ink on someone's hand rather than something else.
Come Monday, Randy.
It's a Randy Orton watch party. Watch because it's on his wrist and he's got cheese.
Riddle asks Orton if they can go for Philly cheesesteaks afterwards, and there's some patter about Pat and Geno's. And then prior to the match, they also show that excellent, I think it was either a tweet or an Instagram from Chad Gable, of them working out, Gable and Otis, working on their necks to stop them succumbing to the RKO with the phrase, Team No Necks.
I like that. Yeah. It's really quite funny and absurd.
Yeah. Gable's been great the whole time. They just Vince looks at him like we always say and goes, ooh.
I don't want to discredit Otis's part in this, but that is very Gable, isn't it?
It's very Gable.
Like, Ready, Willing and Gable was a towel. Like he put a pun on a towel. This is in his wheelhouse.
Yeah.
Imagine, because they've kind of a similar sense of humour, similar kind of working style. A Chad Gable, Brian Danielson tag team in AEW.
Oh, God. That'd be great, wouldn't it? It'd
be fantastic.
Well, instead we'll have to make do with the Alpha Academy. They took on Randy Orton Riddle for the Raw Tag Team titles, as I said early on. Riddle takes out Gable with a dive to take us to a break, and during the break, Gable takes control, doing a nice dragon screw off the ropes. Always looks so good when he does that.
American Beta. That's what they could be called. And they could play with that, couldn't they? Because he's American Dragon.
Riddle knocks down Otis with a floating bro and does tag in Randy Orton, who hits Gable with clotheslines and a power slam. He knocks Otis off the apron and then superplexes Chad Gable. Riddle tries to take Otis out at ringside, but Otis takes him down. Orton is facing a two-on-one numbers game effectively here. He's in there with Gable, fighting him off. He's in control. He looks like he's got the match won, but there's a blind tag that Orton doesn't see. Otis comes in, catches Orton with a world's strongest slam. 1, 2, 3. Alpha Academy, Chad Gable and Otis are your new Raw Tag Team Champions. Riddle couldn't get in to break up the count. And a shocking result for the Philly crowd, I think it's fair to say. I can't believe, I genuinely was astonished to get into work today and say, a second Raw Tag Team title reign for Chad Gable. Completely forgot about the first one he had with Robert Roode, of all people. First gold on the main roster for Otis. But I suppose you both called it yesterday.
I sensed it could be coming. As I said those words yesterday on the preview, oh, maybe it's too soon. Maybe they'll do a Rumble spot where they're both in the ring and like Riddle's kind of, you know, doesn't want to wrestle Randy. They'd want to team up and then Randy could chuck him and all the rest of it. Dare I say, right? You know how people praise WWE when it's like, oh my God, guys, that's a storyline. And it's like, yes, obviously it is, because that's what they do. You can't praise them for doing something. It's like praising like a vet for not killing a dog. He didn't kill that dog. Well done, that's great. That's just his job. That's a bare minimum of his job, okay?
Like those websites where you're like, rate traders or like, rate a vet, and that's the lowest possible curve. Didn't kill my pet.
I read one online the other review the other day where it's like, yeah, did Sami Zayn get beat on SmackDown?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, it's like, yeah, Sami Zayn got beat on SmackDown, but, you know, he's probably still going to win the Intercontinental title, and that's good. It's like, is it? Or would you rather just have a guy who's, like, credible to win? It's like...
Yeah, he lost to Boogs in order to set up him probably beating Nakamura.
Someone praised this. I at least got some direction after this. It's like, the stupidest direction that makes him look stupid, right? So I hate it so much. All right, yeah. Absolutely rubbish match, but, you know, there's some storyline direction for this guy after. Good. That's what I cannot underscore, italicize, bold enough how much that take just breaks my brain and how low the standards are. So given my how much I hate that, they did a twist here. They did a fairly advanced storytelling technique that I thought was genuinely quite tremendous. So the whole idea is Randy Orton, and what was great about all of this, other than the match, which was incidental to the story they're telling, realistically, it was fine. It wasn't great. It's WWE. They don't really care about tag team wrestling. What was great about this is that you got a glimpse of Orton, and they did it via a quite good side gag, visual gag. He was really at the end of his tether with Riddle here. Tag in Randy written on his hands. It's how little he thinks of Riddle at this point. He really sold it as if, I'm getting near the end of my tether with this blithering idiot who I'm starting to really start to resent again, right? And it's Randy who takes the fall. Mm-hmm. And the best thing is that Riddle is going to be completely fine with this because he's the babyface. He's going to say, Randy, let's just win the titles back. I believe in us, we can do it, right? So when it's going to get subverted and Riddle loses the rematch, for example, Randy is going to do that which Riddle didn't and be a complete knob about it. And that's going to layer the sympathy on Riddle. This is genuinely really, really, really good, and I cannot believe it.
Yeah, to paraphrase an Onion headline, I think it was the Onion, the worst pricks you hate in wrestling are in a great storyline.
Like, yes!
this is really great. And yeah, just to sort of, like, to echo Sidgwick's take, basically, I couldn't believe how good this was on a WWE show for all of those reasons, and for the fact that it's so earned. The Just Tag Randy thing, I think I've been a bit critical on these podcasts, The RK-Bro matches, if you love them, enjoy them now because they're going soon. But they've like been really true to a formula. That hot tag is red hot. Randy Orton has never felt so hot, quite frankly, as when he gets that hot tag off Riddle. And that's driven this next development. Tag me. You've like, Riddle, have you watched the tapes? Are you watching Raw? Because look what happens every week. You get decked, but you tag me in and things turn out all right in the end. And then we reach the point that Cedric just pointed out where things have gone wrong and it's because of Randy. So incredibly inspired. It gives me hope for not just the turn, but the things they might have planned for them after the fact. Because odds are you're going to have probably like a 6 to 8 week period where the match is as good as official. They maybe even flash the graphic up and you've got to start doing stuff. And Riddle is not going to be anything other than Riddle. There's going to be 1 week where they're going to ask him to be intense. And it's either going to be him at the tail end of the Adam Cole match on that first episode of, or that third episode of NXT on USA, or him having to do fake, like puce face anger that he just can't do, you know? So that could go horribly wrong. But this has given us reason to believe that they're actually going to make it all the way to WrestleMania. I'm genuinely marveling at the details here. And not only has it been sort of earned by Randy Orton constantly being great on the hot tag, they even got across the, well, you can't RKO Otis. And he couldn't, and he lost. Characters are seeing things through.
It's incredible. For
like 4 or 5 weeks at a time. Really quite something. Gable's got yet another team over. So look forward to that disbanding in 6 months with no fanfare whatsoever. And they'll move him on to somebody else. Like at this point, I cannot wait for Gable and Omos to win the tag titles in 12 months. What a team they're going to make.
The Philly crowd as well. We talk about dead crowds and they've got an excuse to be dead crowds. The Philly crowd elevated much of this Raw as well. I will say that.
And then they got a shock tag team loss immediately after that with another six-man tag that came after it. Before that, a couple of promos. Damian Priest announcing he's going to be in the Royal Rumble match. He meets with the Street Profits and says, oh, we're going to beat Cruz and the Dirty Dogs. And Bianca Belair cuts a promo on Becky Lynch. Her time at the top is coming to an end, etc. And then we got, Ziggler, Roode and Cruz versus Damian Priest and the Street Profits.
Just a really quick word on the promo. Like those WWE conversations where nobody would ever speak like that. Like, you come into work one day, serious face. I'm like, that's unlike the band Hound himself. Hold on, is it? Are you going to be Adam or Wilborn today at work before we record podcasts? That's what they're like. At this point, other wrestlers are noticing.
Are you going to be angry Adam or wacky Wilborn?
Are you going to be curly or whirly? we just don't know. Like the Street Profit, like people asking that of Damien Priest ruins this whole thing. Like the whole idea is
you're not meant to know.
Yeah, like he's supposed to be like, oh, what has become of me? And it's just outwardly asking him, you're going to be the nice guy or the kind of a pain in the ass guy? He's like, I just don't know.
Damien Priest had this kind of expression, you know, like in stupid American TV shows where like someone's standing up and with one foot, the kind of like go side to side on their toes. It's like, I don't know. Damien Priest is like, well, what am I going to do? What am I like?
What am I like? That's exactly what I was
about
to say.
What am I like? I don't know why stupid American TV shows have turned it to Corey, but
those 80s, 90s sitcoms where for the credits at the end, it's always a freeze frame from earlier in the episode. So it's got like, Damien Priest, thumbs up. And then next one, Damien Priest, thumbs down. Freeze frame.
Is he just trying to work his way into a trademark What Culture side-by-side thumb?
Basically.
What was he trying to do?
I don't want to sort of dismiss this match because, like, Montez Ford did all the Montez Ford things. So I am just going to say this is your bog standard Monday Night Raw 10-minute six-man tag match, effectively. But again, Montez Ford was just flipping all over the place. Angelo Dawkins came in, looked great as well, to be fair. He comes in, suplexes Ziggler, suplexes Roode. It's a bulldog on Roode and a silencer as well. Then in comes Apollo Crews to make the save. Priest goes after Crews. Aziz distracts him, though. Ford bloody flips out the dive to take out Crews and Aziz. Dawkins hits Roode with a spinebuster. But again, it's been another blind tag. In comes Ziggler. Zigzag on Dawkins. 1, 2, 3. Bit of a just... This is where it was just, oh, this is Monday Night Raw I'm watching.
I didn't get any of this, in truth. If the idea is that you want to indirectly get Ziggler challenging Priest's title, we've already seen it. I don't understand why Dolph Ziggler's going over. If anything, given who the new tag team champions are, you really want to get the Street Profits geared up for a title match, or at least a title chase. Basically... they didn't do anything good.
It occurred to me in this match, of which there was absolutely no detail that I want to pick out or talk about or praise or analyse, that there's some very clever and shrewd cross-brand manipulation going on by WWE at the moment. Over the past 48 hours, I've watched, for the purposes of review, matches by the Viking Raiders and the Street Profits, in which I could summon not a single thought about either of them. They're like, matches are fine, but the booking is just coasting. I believe that only exists at the same time so that somewhere somebody is going to leave a comment on the Bin Monster video saying, God, why can't WWE like this again? Failing. Give back when these two meant something and we're in the bin with a monster.
Well, those were low times.
Yeah.
Low time.
Low.
Remember that same window that they smashed twice? Because it was obviously the one window they were, like, by a door. It was like one panel of, like, obviously single glazing compared to the rest of the performance center. Vince is like, smash Paul's window again. I just got it replaced and dead.
Yeah.
And he's like, and what people think is like, oh, I know what ninjas look like. Wait a second, ninjas don't go that big normally.
Go that big.
Jesus Christ.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Well, we got Seth Rollins' promo next. Thankfully clearing up how on earth someone from Monday Night Raw can challenge for SmackDown's world. He said he was excited for the Royal Rumble, not because of those two brutes, those two Godzilla-looking bear.
I did the face as well.
Lesnar and Lashley fighting out other Rumble matches, but because he's going to become Universal Champion. He didn't get the match because of a, quote, penguin-looking advocate. He got it because he's Seth freaking, trademark, Rollins, and he was going to beat Roman Reigns yet again. Out comes Big E. He's excited as Rollins. He's excited as Gritty after a Philadelphia Flyers victory. Have you seen Gritty before?
You told me. Is he like the American Blobby?
He's like a nightmarish mascot. Have you seen Gritty
no,
before?
No. So but my eyebrows raised at American Blobby. I'm listening.
Philadelphia Flyers ice hockey mascot.
Yeah.
They just, I don't know how long he's been a thing for, but he's amazing on social media.
Right.
And he looks like that.
What I'm looking at is like an orange grimace from the McDonald's characters, but with funnier eyes, wearing a Philadelphia Flyers hockey jersey. And he's got blobby levels of chaos.
I'm not sure if he's
blobby levels.
Elite tier chaos.
I watched some clips of him. I think it was on like last week tonight or something. It was like him keeping himself entertained when there was the full on lockdown last year. And he was doing like, you know, when people do the things where it's like a ping pong ball off like a wall and then a frying pan and something else into a cup. And he did more and more complicated things. And he sort of squeaked every time it went in. And I don't know if that's when he moved or that's the noise he makes. And he also threatened physical violence against another mascot. Like, you know, when they go like, whoa, see you on Sunday, Newcastle United or whatever. One of the other teams did it. And he wrote, keep joking, bird. Like, threatening physical violence. So for me, this is the one time, because all the time they go, like there was a bit later on with some, I think a basketball player for Philadelphia, and there was a reference, and I just, all the time when they do this, obviously it works really well. You think of like Elias and Kevin Owens working on a local sports team, and I always go, and it also doesn't even work when you're here in the UK. We've talked about it before, when they go like, how about that Manchester City, huh? And people go, yeah, the crap, or whatever.
If you're an American citizen, and you're like from one of these like, you know, rural-esque or not particularly glamorous big cities, and WWE goes, well, welcome to Monday Night Raw, coming to you live from America. Because I don't want to say, because it's not glamorous that they're in like Battle Creek, Michigan. And yet when they go to Philly, it's like gritty cheesesteaks. We're in a big goddamn place, guys. How big is this? If you're from Battle Creek, just go All Elite.
Yeah.
I told you when I went to the Birmingham tapings and they put their Titantron pictures of Big Ben. Like, yeah. It was in England.
Didn't Manchester have like a phone, a red phone?
Yeah,
box and stuff?
Like
a taxi.
Like they're literally telling you that you think they're your little just bum.
Where'd this mascot get his name from?
Little is he bumpkin?
Moonlighting for Edge and Beth Phoenix.
Well, because he's got patter.
But I did. This is the one time I popped for a local reference. Anyway, Big E said he was going to beat Rollins, win the Royal. So he's entering the Royal Rumble and he's going to beat Rollins at WrestleMania to win the world title. Rollins does his. Say you've got no chance.
That's a really, really good impression.
I could do like noises.
I couldn't look at you because I've worked it out. That thing that Seth. Freaking Rollins.
I could do wrestling noises, but I can't do like accents and impressions. Oh,
but the two of us.
Oh, yeah!
That's Chris Jericho.
It's Rollins. Give us another noise, I'll do them all.
Triple H after he's played the Kane video. Good.
I like that. My favourite Triple H noise is the. Yeah! On the ramp.
God, we've killed some years.
Oh, apologies, everyone. Anyway, Big E offers him out for a fight. Rollins says he doesn't want one. Big E goads him into it, effectively saying they're both in their gear. And Rollins accepts it and then beats Big E. Like, I'm a hypocrite here because the match, given plenty of time, I really quite enjoyed it. And I thought, oh, they're going to do all this. They're going to do all this and then they're going to go to a DQ or some bollocks. And they didn't. They actually had a finish. But then I just thought, oh, well, that's Big E ruined then. It was a surreal thing because, like I say, I was like, oh, God, they're not going to give us a finish. And then they gave us a finish. And I was like, well, they obviously had to kind of give, they're going to give us a finish, give us that finish, because Rollins can't lose on his way to facing Reigns. But even so, Big E, like, I know that the Royal Rumble win generally is just like a reset button. It's like, well, whatever's happened before, he's won the Rumble now. But I don't know. Well, I'll get your thoughts on this after I talk about the match. Big E splashes Rollins like immediately to take us to a break on the apron. And he's chucking Rollins' face off the announce table as we come back. And they're saying, I'm God, hit with Seth freaking Rollins' freaking sweat on commentary or some bollocks. Goes for the big ending. Rollins gets out of it. Chop plots Big E. Hits the knee, the flying knee strike for a two count. Big E fights back. STO clothesline. Spear through the ropes to the outside. Genuinely panicked for a split second that I thought he had actually hurt himself properly there. Because he grabbed his arm immediately. And after the last week we've had, I never like seeing stuff like that. Big E fights back, I think after another break. Overhead suplexes, a splash, but Rollins fights back with a rolling forearm. They trade counters. Rollins hits an enziguri, super kick, frog splash, gets near falls after all of them. Goes for a curb stomp. Big E counters into a powerbomb brilliantly. Puts him on the stretch muffler, but Rollins gets to the ropes. Big E tries for that spear through the ropes again. Rollins gets his knee up. They counter each other, and then Rollins out of nowhere. Forearm strikes, curb stomp, 1, 2, 3.
I don't want to go full Bruce Pritchard, right? But he'll do this thing on his podcast, which is lower in the charts than ours, incidentally. Mm. Right? Where Conrad Thompson will read him The Observer about like April 1995. Dave Meltzer gave a Fed match from and In Your House or whatever. Like, star and a half. That goddamn Dave Mosley. What was so great about it is that it told a story, right? So I want to just do that impression now so that I never get confused with that guy ever again. But here's a take for you. Emotion matters way more than work rate. And when I instantly saw these two together, I thought, no good can come of this. Like, absolutely zero good can come of this. And I thought, oh, obviously you're working a good dramatic match, really quite well worked, crowd are into it. I'm not, because I know for a fact no good can come of this. Everything begins and ends with Roman Reigns. Seth Rollins is about to have a match with Roman Reigns. They want this Roman Reigns match to appear as dramatic as possible. So Seth Rollins has to beat the former WWE champ clean to get to Roman Reigns and to make the Roman Reigns match feel unpredictable, incredible, and big as a result. So that's why Big E gets beat clean, right, on Raw. Thus, seemingly killing his main event push. To a degree, I can half understand why WWE stands do the whole let it play out thing, because I'm watching this thinking, now they can't possibly be this stupid. Now they can't possibly be this stupid. Are they stupid enough to either kill Big E senselessly when Seth Rollins could have just beaten anyone?
Mm-hmm.
Or do they think that...
Or you could have had, and I don't always want to see shenanigans, but you've established this relationship with Kevin Owens. So if you want to deep beat Big E...
He wasn't there because I think his family are afflicted by COVID right now. So maybe, but then he still just beat someone else.
Yes.
Not Big E. Are they either this thick that they think, oh, Big E wins the Rumble, they can run this back with their preferred underdog narrative? Or do they just think, oh, well, they'll forget this. Mm. Big E can win the Rumble and Seth Rollins can lose to Roman. And then they can have their consolation prize at Mania. But they won't forget. They won't remember this. They're stupid. Vince McMahon has on record said this as well. Not on record. Brian Gewirtz, quoting Vince McMahon, does think we will forget little TV matches like this.
Yeah, WWE, it's junk food worst, this for me. Don't ask questions. Just keep eating. Don't at all unpick any of the loose threads here. Otherwise, the whole thing falls apart as it so often does. I couldn't feel anything possibly for that.
Can't possibly do a Mania WWE title match on telly in January.
But they can now because there's no rules to this anymore. Yeah. Like the year used to be about like that you wouldn't see something in November that you'd then see again in April, and we've seen it. And it like
if Big E's run failed, and they failed him.
Yeah.
And it's probably about time everyone accepted it.
But like it's...
Well, people say though, oh, they failed because he was too fun. Failed because you booked him terribly.
Yeah, he lost frequently.
Yeah. And he's lost here, and he lost after saying, I'm going to beat you tonight and then win the Royal Rumble. So if anybody does remember this, where he's failed to do what he just said he was going to do, so why would we believe he's going to win? They're by assuming that we forget that, they'll also assume that we can now just hear him say, next week, I'm going to win the Royal Rumble, and they'll just believe it. And I'm not just saying this because yesterday on, I think it was a SmackDown review, I said, well, WWE have something here with Seth Rollins. It's fundamentally stupid because they don't respect the rules of their own universe. But if Postman Pierce was to come out and say, the reason I got Seth Rollins a title match was because I looked back at the day one situation and watched his situation rather unfairly get worse and worse and worse and worse until there was four people in his singles title match, including one announced on the day. They did none of that. Seth Rollins just got it. So by default, does that not make Big E look weak too? Like, how has Seth Rollins, with his annoying laugh and his weird clothes, gone and got that match when Big E hasn't? Because he found himself in those unfavorable circumstances too. Postman Pierce, for some reason, has picked Seth Rollins over Big E. So he doesn't even feel like he's a favorite internally, let alone externally, when he's losing to the guy that he said he was going to beat.
Mm.
A real failure, this. Again, if you ask fairly simple questions of the booking, which they don't ever want you to do.
And astonishing to think that, obviously, we seem to think that Roman Lesnar's going to be at Mania. Neither of them in the Royal Rumble match, of course, both defending their titles. And Charlotte Flair said, if you win the Royal Rumble, you get the main event of WrestleMania. And there's two of them and two Rumble matches. So presumably Roman Brock won't main event. So, their words, not mine. I'm just asking questions here. Right, let's move on and talk about Nikki A.S.H. and Rhea Ripley. They're in the ring. They get interviewed by Sarah Schreiber. They say, we've got an announcement to make. And Nikki says, we're going to fight for the women's tag team titles again. And I thought, oh, for fuck. Really? You literally lost in 2 minutes in a non-title match last week. And Ripley, thank Christ, said, it's not off mic. Well, not what we came out here to say. That's not what we were going to discuss out here. You'd think they maybe have chatted backstage about this, but still. She thought, presumably, they're going to talk about the Rumble. I thought they were going to announce they were both going to be in the Royal Rumble match. But anyway, Schreiber asks them about their team and the issues that they've had recently. Ripley says, oh, probably not best place to talk about this. And Nikki's like, no, let's have it out now. Let's have it out. She says, look, we should be able to get those titles back. And Ripley was like, no, I watched us losing 2 minutes last week. We were crap. Let's go our separate ways sort of thing. And Nikki says, I thought we brought out the best in each other. I know you blame me for the loss, as she should. She said, look, I know, you know, one of us feels like the better wrestler. And he's like, hey, I never claim to be better than you. And Nikki goes, no, I'm better than you. What? Anyway, Ripley's had enough. She goes to leave, offers a handshake before they go their separate ways. She says, look, I still believe in you, Nikki. I hope we can still be friends. And she hugs Nikki, who asks her if she's being sincere. And Nikki turns her back, and I thought, brilliant, here we go. Rhea Ripley's going to absolutely wreck this fool. But no, Ripley offers out a fist bump, and Nikki takes it, and then chins her, lays her out, beats her down, walks out. The superheroes become a supervillain, Michael Hanfler. And she says, almost superheroes don't need any friends, as she walks out up the ramp.
Justice League!
I loved hating this.
I did as well.
I loved hating this. And there was a couple of reasons. And one was actually work-based. A call you'll sometimes hear across the office. I need one for a list.
Yes.
So myself and Cedric and Murray, or whoever's doing the list, will sometimes just be one short of the tens that you see on whatclutch.com. And I'm coming soon, at my own fair hand, is 10 funniest fan heckles. They're quite hard to come across, but when you spot them, they're great. And we've talked of some of the best ones on these podcasts before, and there's some more coming to the list, whatclutch.com/WB, very, very soon. And I needed one for a list. And then Raw gave me one for a list. And what I enjoyed so much was that I love when the transparency of WWE's failure to reach its own audience is shown on television and there's absolutely nothing they can do about it. You think more of chants, don't you? Like the fans trying to hijack shows, which you don't really seem to have the energy much for anymore. But WWE are about to deliver the Nikki A.S.H. heel turn, right? They're about to do what they believe is right for the storyline, right for the Rhea Ripley character, right for both characters, I guess, by having Nikki swerve turn on Rhea Ripley to bring this team to an end. And one fan, as they are struggling to generate drama with this risible dialogue, one fan you can hear shouting out as they're looking to like make Nikki the most sympathetic one as possible. Hit her with the riptide, Rhea! Right before Nikki swings a fist as evidence that they have yet again completely misread the room, completely misjudged the temperature of a situation. Rhea Ripley is suffering and continues to suffer. I wouldn't say this is on a par with the lowest lows of the Charlotte Flair feud, but this character is dying out there, and now she's been turned on by her former partner, this loser gimmick that was thrust upon Nikki, or, you know, had, I don't know, collaborative process, but either way, it's a loser gimmick. I enjoyed how bad this was, but only to a certain point, because we say this now, when things are going for this badly for characters, you have to remember that this is a company that is ruthless with its releases.
Yeah, it's not the same anymore, is it?
It was one of those things where I hope Rhea Ripley comes out next week and goes, where's that been for the last few weeks?
And then
where's
that
fire been?
Nopes her with a top rope.
Yeah, wrecks her. And I had mixed emotions about this because I was like, oh, thank God they're not a tag team anymore. But my word, as Hamlet said, the dialogue here and the way it played out was dreadful.
Oh, it's absolutely dreadful. When people say professional wrestling is just a terrible soap opera, this is precisely the sort of segment they are talking about. This is just so removed from professional wrestling for me. I understand that a heel turn happened and you meant to side with someone and you meant to sympathize with the other, but like Rhea Ripley was just such a sap, like so nice. There's no
when she came out and I know it's a different world away, came down in NXT and was like, yeah, I'm beating this bitch to Shayna Baszler, for example.
Oh, and she was the one NXT draw in 2 years, you mean? That Rhea Ripley.
Other than Adam Cole.
Yeah.
One of which they ruined, one of which they sort of encouraged to leave the company outright. Yeah. Absolutely.
Oh, they offered to give him a haircut.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, this is just absolutely terrible. I thought the performances were unconvincing, but then why criticize the performances? Rhea Ripley shouldn't be performing this kind of material. Nikki A.S.H., just wearing that gear, right, doing this material It's just comical. Like, absolutely.
Look me in the eyes, Nikki. Look,
lift your mask up. It's just absolutely dire.
We're in a bit of a dangerous place here with this podcast now, Michael Hamplet. Like 40 minutes in, you still haven't got the five-star review yet. You haven't dropped your skip yet.
Okay.
And this is normally around the time of the podcast where Michael Sidgwick says, oh, get on with it, I'm hungry. Well, we have to talk about cheesesteaks next because Dana Brooke and Reggie are having cheesesteaks in the back. Why? Doesn't matter whether they're in Philadelphia. But Reggie's got a sixth sense, I suppose, that something's about to happen. He thinks Dana's going to get jumped for her 24/7 championship. Why isn't Reggie trying to win it? Because that doesn't matter.
Is he trying to win her heart 24/7?
In her heart. More Von Wagner stuff, is it? Okay. There's R-Truth.
Dana Brooks Jensen.
R-Truth's pushing a bin. Kira Tazar was in it. They realise what's about to happen. They escape via throwing cheesesteaks in the general direction of R-Truth and the bin. But it turns out, on her birthday, they've hit Tamina with them, who's so furious, she beats up a bin. And then Reggie runs into Omos, who tries to kill him, and Dana Brooke has to say, put him down, and he does. So that happened as well.
I'm beginning genuinely to earnestly enjoy how low effort the 24/7 title stuff is, because one of my favourite things about WWE is when you imagine the process. So I obviously, like any rational-minded person, hated Raw Underground. I at least laughed at like the production meeting that generated Raw Underground. Oh, Christ. Tits, MMA, a fight club, is that cool or whatever? I like
Can we get
that.
Shane looking like a war correspondent?
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So, right. What I love about this is just the writer's room. Like, they're waiting desperately for the day when Vince either forgets or they're just saying, does that USA Network, who really likes this belt, has he not been like... He's not doing one of these sideways moves to like Warner that all of these like execs do these days. Do this? Still care about this? What do we do? It's like, well, food fight with the regional food stuff. Yeah, God, all of a second to do this.
There's a particular prop in wrestling that you have to be very careful with, and I love the way that standards have slipped and attitudes have changed. That over 27 years. It was considered a cardinal sin. Hell has frozen over because the former Alundra Blaze has dropped a valueless title in a bin. Now wrestlers are getting them by choice and being pushed around by other wrestlers. Not the belt, the actual human beings are literally in the bin by choice.
Also like the idea of our fictional Floridian family moving away and saying, look, you know, for whatever reason, we've got to move out of Florida and we're moving to Philadelphia. And they go, well, you know, we're not in WWE's backyard now. I don't know what we're going to do to make ends meet, love. I've just opened a sandwich shop and I hope for the best. Cling.
Hey, pal, give me the stickiest cheese steaks you got.
Do you want to eat them?
Hell no. I want to throw them at someone who's celebrating their birth. That's what I want to do, pal.
I think we've had a massive order in. What do you mean you think? Well, a guy came in, he said, we need about 400. Do it again.
So, yeah, that happened.
Can we pretend Austin Theory segments still happen? Just to keep the voice alive, which is... ironic, considering the voice doesn't sound alive.
I love it if they started shooting them, because this week it was obviously just expositional, isn't it? Like, us in theory. Yeah, Vince said to me, it's like, didn't you, Vince? Like, old Vince soundboard. I sure did, pal. Like, you never see his face anymore. He's just got a Will Bond soundboard. Isn't that right, Vince? And God bless the United States.
Who told you that you're getting a match tonight? I can't remember.
It was me, Austin.
Yeah, oh, yeah, sorry, it was Vince. Yeah, thanks for that, Vince.
Well, it looks like I've been out telling me.
The tape gets stuck, but it's Vince. He can't even tell.
So we get a Doodoo Apple promo. She says 2022 is the year that we all get a Doodoo Apple. And that was that. Anything you want to say about this?
No.
Okay. And then Omos squashed a jobber called Nick Sanders in like 90 seconds, hit him with a tree slam. Making Omos unstoppable.
He's not good.
And he's going to, well, I think he said subsequent to that segment before, he's going to kill Reggie next week whilst he flips all over the place, probably.
Mm-hmm.
Which means that Dana's going to be isolated, which means we're seeing a title change next week.
Tamina's winning the big one.
Finally!
She's probably got a huge pop for it now.
Yeah. Then we got the cutting edge.
Skip. Oh, no.
I mean, I kind of wish I could when I was watching it. Like,
no, we should talk about the cutting edge.
He does a great introduction.
Is there anything to skip after this?
Oh, don't worry, there is. It's something we can skip and then we can talk about it on the NXT preview instead.
Oh, great.
It's the cutting edge.
It's not really skipping then, is it?
It's just sort of delaying the inevitable.
Yeah.
The most gorgeous and curvaceous guest he has ever had, the owner of thighs that could crack a coconut, Edge introduced Beth Phoenix. He said she'd have been in the Broad Street Bullies if they were in the 70s and they've collected championships the same way the Flyers have collected.
Flyers? Cool name.
It's Triple H's favorite hockey team, the Philadelphia Flyers.
the way the Flyers have collected Stanley Cups. They've won 35 titles as a couple. I mean, it's weighted in one way, but okay, fair enough. more than any other couple in WWE. They're the only couple in the WWE's Hall of Fame. Even plays this brilliant video package for Beth Phoenix.
Sheer and Sutton.
She comes out and says, oh, you play that to butter me up for later? Down boy, we'll save that for later. What's that?
They're going to really incredibly intense intercourse. Like holding each other's heads, eyes to eyes as they together climax.
Out of forest.
She's just moving a finger around the back and then he goes, here, here, here. I hate Dude, this mind. I felt
missionary,
so
Missionary, doggy, hair on top. All the positions.
Anyway, Beth Phoenix is sick of Miz and Maryse.
The barely alive sex celebration.
Wants to shut their mouths for good outcome, Miz and Maryse.
Critteris.
Miz said he sided with Ben Simmons, who's a basketball player. Something about Helvia. He'd heard that Edge had got a video package ready for Beth Phoenix, so he had a video package of Maryse instead. Said, we're all lucky to be in Maurice's presence. Puts over career work, work ethics. But then Edge said, yeah, she's good and all that, but Phoenix can deadlift a Buick, basically.
We know what the G&G spot sounds like.
I also really liked that in the Beth Phoenix video when they were like, hey, remember when she was in the Rumble and eliminated Great Khali? And I was like, you've missed the middle out of that segment. Comes out in the Rumble, Great Khali gets eliminated. What happened to cause that? I can't remember. Anyway, Beth Phoenix says she's going to wreck both of them, particularly Maryse, and the crowd are going to chant au revoir, and Miz is furious about all this and says, oh, yeah, you think you can beat her? Well, my wife's the best, and she's going to come and smash you in and blah, blah, blah. In the midst of him rambling on about how great she is, Maryse has just got terrified and bailed. Miz doesn't realise, and Beth Phoenix laughs at him and says, I'll just smash your teeth in as well, even if she does leave and doesn't make it to the Royal Rumble instead. Not a fan of this, Hamlet.
No, Miz is the best thing about this whole program by leaps and bounds. And that's not ideal because you're really supposed to love the baby faces. That's the worst thing. They've sent them out there to flirt awkwardly. Like, watching your mum and dad, man. Like, it feels weird. So you instead, you have to...
million?
You emotionally detach from Edge and Jacqueline, and instead, you don't feel, because that feels gross, you think instead, and you're like, oh, Miz is trying to drag this material over. Look, said it from the very beginning when we pitched the idea of the match. I think the match will be a lot of fun. Like, Maryse has absolutely no problem, showing ass for Beth Phoenix.
Mm-hmm.
Beth Phoenix
I can probably still go. Like, there's going to be, it's going to be quite enjoyable. There's going to be a sense of nostalgia, but not just like fossilized nostalgia that you get sometimes with an Edge match. So I think elements of the match will be quite a lot of fun. I do not want to see any more of these interactions.
No, just have Beth Phoenix glam slam Miz on the match, and that'd be amazing.
That's good, yeah.
I mean, this whole segment was awkward as hell. It's like, you live together. Should not have more chemistry than this. It's absolutely bizarre. But like, from a point of view of wrestling the match, right? Watching the wrestling match that is upcoming. Did this really build my excitement ahead of it?
You said they don't need to do anything else with these.
I get, they've
just got to fill 3 hours. So that's the problem.
I get the idea, right, of... And I put this on the script because I think Maryse is a sorely underrated performer. Mm. In fact, myself, Murray, and Hamlet the other week watched The Miz and Maryse be John Cena and Nikki Bella parody.
Absolutely timeless.
Absolutely tremendous. So this isn't on Maryse, right? But the idea is that The Miz is writing checks that Maryse can't cash, yes. Right? Maryse's selling of this is like she's genuinely scared. Mm. She's genuinely a little bit worried and she doesn't want to be in the match. And I'm not thinking, like, she should have done something awful and underhanded, right, to Beth Phoenix, to warrant Beth Phoenix being the stronger, more decorated woman, threatening to kick her ass, and then Maryse can sell it by being a fraidy cat who's going to get her comeuppance. Mm. She just looks like really outmatched.
Yeah.
So there's no drama. I feel a little bit sorry for her. She's like an object to Miz at this point, so there's this weird sympathy element going on the heel side. It's a load of absolute overthought rubbish, quite frankly.
Well, we got a match following this, but before that, we got Kevin Patrick backstage with Austin Theory. He's talking.
You brace about yourself, man. Steve Austin used to his knees for that impression at this point. You put yourself back for it.
He's talking about his match against AJ Styles, and he said that Mr. McMahon had warned him, allegedly, about how good AJ Styles was, but he was ready to prove to Mr. McMahon why he should continue to invest in him. And he said, did McMahon give you any other advice? And he said, yeah, he told me, don't screw this up. I don't think he probably said it like that, do you?
Screw it up, much. Screw
I'm going to have to watch that.
That's great, isn't it?
So then we got Austin Theory versus AJ Styles.
Skip!
Grayson Waller got involved. It went to a DQ. Enough of all that. It's now time for this.
It's short. It's crap. It's wrestling related. The five-star review. Nailed it!
And this week's five-star review is brought to you by Chase Austin. If you want to suggest something short, crap, and wrestling related, subscribe to us on iTunes and leave us a five-star review on there. Or you can email it to me, adam.wilborn@whatculture.com.
But Spotify allow 5 stars now. So
yeah, do that as well.
Do they?
Yeah, they've just added them recently, so let's fool some more algorithms and get some new reviews through that.
I'll have a look into that as well. I'm not sure if people have already done some. I'll look into that this week. Chase Austin, anyway, writes, the entire network has amazing podcasts and news, but I find a special kind of joy when the boys pop for the five-star review on Tuesdays. Hamlet and Sidgwick.
On calm Tuesdays.
Hamlet and Sidgwick provide great insight, and Wilborn is most certainly the king of the bap. Genuinely, if you haven't committed this to your daily routine, you are missing out. What a sell this is from Chase. For the five-star review, I'd love to leave it as Sidgwick's choice. Best wishes to all of the What Culture gents and Wilborn too. What are we going to do this week then, Sidge?
Well, what we're going to do is we're going to take the piss out of an idiot. One of my preferred recreational activities, and I'm going to do some Southern United States accents, which is also something I like to do from time to time.
When the time allows.
I reckon. I'm powerful into it.
So, who or what are we talking about here?
Right back. Or more specifically, Skip Sheffield.
Skip Sheffield, what to do? Hamlet, why don't you tell us...
South Park version of Skip Sheffield.
Hamlet, why don't you tell us what he did on NXT Season 1?
So what he was doing before he came right back, was working at Skip Sheffield. I took the notes here. Considering what we're about to talk about and what we know of Ryback in general, his run was so forgettable that I had to look it up. I scribbled it down before the podcast, and I had to check the notes again. I couldn't remember this, like, almost nothing, right? He finished sixth.
Out
of a cast of eight. Right, so he was gone virtually as soon as the eliminated. In fact, he was gone in the second week, not even the third, because Michael Tarver and Daniel Bryan went in the same week, because they were so desperate to get Bryan gone straight away. I still didn't count as a proper elimination. Like, Michael Tarver, you're the real elimination, so he was gone. In that time he was on NXT before he was eliminated, he had a 2-5 record, which included tag losses, because even his partner in pro, William Regal, didn't really like him. So I almost find myself defending him at this point, because he sort of was memorable. Memorable enough for like Cedric to pick him to think, oh, I wonder what Skip Sheffield was up to or whatever, considering that he had one of the more unremarkable runs on a season that created the Nexus. There was all these people that you remember for various reasons. You know, Justin Gabriel pulling the ropes over, so Matt Hardy fell through them and the like. And yeah, Ryback wasn't even there for that long. Skip Sheffield, sorry.
So we got a video package of... It's like a signature introduction piece, like a minute and a half on him. First thing you hear.
Gotta say, I've picked this not only to do Yank impressions, but like, just, well, I won't ruin it. You'll go through the thing.
First thing, Michael Cole, the corn-fed meathead. And this little flex in there. Josh Matthews says, the muscle will hustle. I don't know what that was. I like the fact that the first thing, Christian says something complimentary about him, but the fact he precedes that with, actually, does that surprise you?
Can I just shock you?
I like Skip Sheffield. He's a nice guy, good guy.
And the repeat of, like, guy as well, is pretty much like Larry David repeating pretty. Like, Christian is like, he's pretty, pretty nice. he's got that face. They've, like, wrestlers... For generations now, I guess, have talked about that, like, Christian can be a real piece of backstage in the way that you love him, but he can just own you with a click of a finger. He does that in a talking head here for me. Like, yeah. He's just put right back in the dirt with his first comment.
William Regal's next. He's his mentor, and he goes, he's got energy, he's got aggression, and he's strong. No talent to speak of.
It's basically, you know how like the mold lumps of clay? He's a lump of clay. That's William Regal's assessment. I'm mold them yet, but he's a lump of clay.
There's another ringing endorsement coming. Matt Hardy. Skip Sheffield is definitely an interesting character, to say the least.
Basically, this entire vignette is just... Right, get him over as a village idiot. Because that's what he is. So talk around it, because it's funnier, because that way he might not understand it when he watches it back.
Do you want to read...
Hey, they said I'm nice.
Do you want to read the Skip Sheffield promo that they show next, which features his incredible incredible catchphrase, of course?
If you good people want to kick it up, a rap and put some bap in your step, all I can hear is yep, yep, yep.
And then they show two people in the stand going yep, yep, yep. Like, not like... You know, yes, you think of yes, yes, we're speaking.
Yep, yep, yep.
They show just some.
Yip, 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 what a do, Sting and Bulldog.
Just some honey boo boo child mama looking ass sat in the crowd.
Jesus Christ.
Yep, yep, yep. Get me another corn dog.
Because they're corn fed. The corn dog fed me.
And my favourite thing, I think this is the bit you're alluding to, there's also a line from him later. Cuts to CM Punk.
Yeah.
Sid had mentioned this before, just, you know, I just watched the CM Punk bit, considering the history these two have got. So it goes from, yep, 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 to just CM Punk. And it's a wonderful edit. It's just him going, ugh. That's it. That's the entire clip of CM Punk.
I love this. I love this, right? But I sort of go both ways on it, because it's really funny and it's well edited into this video, and Punk, in doing a breath, has created great content. But we all know of the stories of him like tearing up the scripts in front of writers' faces. Wrong people, really, punching down, but a man frustrated and feeling oppressed himself in the system. Whose job was it that day to say CM Punk, who is wrapped up in a hoodie, just to make it visually clear he wasn't no part of this. We need you in the studio in 10 minutes for Ryback Talking Heads. I can imagine the person that was like, they were probably doing like paper, scissors, stone in the office. But I'm not telling him. I'm not speaking to him.
Chris Jericho, because obviously they're moving on to the other aspect of Ryback's character. They've got through the fact that he's
big. Chris Jericho says, I understand he's got a catchphrase.
I've been reliably informed. That's what English like pundits say when they've got no part of what they've been given.
Somebody with a 100% success rate with catchphrases. I, Chris Jericho.
I also like the fact that, you know, you always, I love the line that you often use, Sid, which is think of the ground that covers. The Miz is then in going, like rolling his eyes, going, yep, 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 what a do. Like, should get a load of this guy.
It's virtually plagiarism, isn't it? From that thing he did earlier. Like, what was it? Or whatever bollocks it was.
Hoorah!
Hoorah! That was it.
And Chris Jericho goes, I don't really know if I like it. And Miz goes, really? Really?
Can you isolate?
Got Blue Peter Badwitch on as well for some reason.
Can you isolate that brilliant Chris Jericho impression and just play it off the soundboard whenever he does anything on Dynamite?
It's Chris Jericho, cut a promo on Dan Lambert on Dynamite this week. I don't really know if I like it. And cuts back to Regal and he goes, he's a little, how can I put this? Jericho goes, I think basically Regal's mortified at what Skip Sheffield is showing him, and there's just a picture of him doing the flare strut up the stairs for no apparent reason, and then Regal mid-match going, don't mess around doing stupid stuff! He's not best pleased with him.
Move forward with your left foot! And then put your right one in front of it. And then left one again, and then right one again.
Skip Sheffield now. It's time to his right of reply, let's say, to Regal. He says, well, he was brought up a different way. He's a different person than what I am.
It's all his British fancy talk.
Punk says, Punk now, finally gets his words out. If anyone can help him in the ring, it's William Regal. He needs to shut up and listen. Oh, how ominous, Phil. How ominous those words will be. And again, as Jericho's been talking about Skip Sheffield's performances, let's say, in NXT so far, we see Skip Sheffield again doing the Ric Flair strut before doing a splash, effectively, on this one. And he says, I think Skip needs to step it up somehow and show me something else than what he's showing me. Which means all of the crap I've seen before, none of that. Regal, patronising pat on the head next. He's trying his best, and he seems to be coming round somewhat.
He won't even finish the sentence with coming round. Qualifier at the end.
Somewhat.
Somewhat. I'm not going to sacrifice my whole credibility for this.
Michael Cole, shilling for Ryback. Maybe Ryback's peaking at the right time, and immediately undercut by Christian going, yeah, but he's going to have to get a lot smarter if he's going to win this competition. Where did he come in the competition again?
Sixth
out of eight. Second week elimination. Final word goes to Skip Sheffield. I'm a lot smarter than people think, and in the coming weeks, people are going to see the real Skip Sheffield. What'd he do? He got eliminated, didn't he?
He did.
Yeah, shame that.
Get her down.
Surprisingly, Michael Sidgwick, they don't allow comments on this video on YouTube. But never fear, I've found other comment sections. Yes, including the video of him clotheslining a fat woman into a pool.
God damn it. I mean, that's what it was.
Once again, these do not reflect the views. Myself, the Dadley Boys, or anyone at What Culture Wrestling.
I feel like the edit button's going to come into play here.
I've been reserved here. Unlike Emilio on Twitter in 2014. Ryback looks like Festus fell into a pool of steroids.
Looks like, and that's not us saying it.
Emilio's thoughts.
Robert Carino, big fan. He embodies a 10-year-old in a man's body. It makes it so entertaining. Again, these compliments really aren't the compliments that I think some people think that they are.
Imagine if, like, Ryback got like a Krang singlet design. He would look like he's got a big giant body with a tiny brain, but it's in the middle of his abs.
Mystery, in the comments of his supplement video, how somebody with this level of creative genius got marginalized by WWE, I'll never know.
The lore of hoying glasses in a pool.
Have I imagined this? Or did they once give Ryback 10 minutes on a Raw to basically read from The Secret.
Yes.
That happened, didn't it?
That what? Did happen, yeah.
Yeah, he went out and cut a promo and he was like, I'm not who you think I am. And let me tell you, I've been reading a book lately. And he just parrots The Secret as kind of his own, like, rules of Ryback or something like that. You lazy bums need to be better. And also, you're going to meet nicer women if you're not so ugly and stinking. And I'm Ryback and I've got goals. I'll see you at WrestleMania.
That happened?
Yeah.
Well, we might have to review that in future weeks. That sounds amazing.
I cannot remember much beyond that, but that was
motivational speaker Ryback almost.
Brilliant. Antonio on Twitter, in response to the tweet, which unfortunately we can't see because we're blocked by Ryback on Twitter, but I assume it's in response to the swimming pool tweet with him with the supplements. Nice yard and nice swimming pool. Good day to you, Ryback. So apparently Keith Lee's got a burner account. Good day. Good day, Mr. Ryback. Mr. Sheffield. What a wondrous back garden you have. And final comment. Jordan McIntyre on the YouTube video of the fat lass getting knocked into a pool.
Oh, mate.
Right.
Oh, like, locker room talks get a bit much.
Too bad he couldn't have got an attractive woman to play the after woman, or I'd have bought this for my girlfriend.
What is that? Worst thing I've ever heard. I got the layers. So he's negging...
The after woman.
So he's negging a woman in a video. And his missus.
And him.
Who he wants to buy the tape for. So there's an implication that he's unhappy with his missus in the first place.
And let's not forget the real victim of all this, Ryback.
Good day, Mr. Sheffield.
So thanks to Chase Austin for suggesting that. I need to watch this Ryback reading The Secret for 10 minutes video. But yes, if you want to suggest something short, crap, wrestling related... do so by leaving a 5-star review on iTunes or Spotify, or you can just email it to me, adam.wilborn@whatculture.com. We return to Monday Night Raw, not with the main event, Michael Sidgwick, just yet.
Oh, Christ.
There was a Liv Morgan promo saying she was going to win the match and then win the title at the Rumble. She didn't, so it doesn't matter. Instead, it's time for the Alexa Bliss segment, isn't it?
Oh, I forgot about this.
So, we've been saying What have they done? 4 months off. What have they got for Alexa Bliss? Exactly the same position she was when she left. She's in the overalls. She's still a child. She's got the dark makeup on, but she's in a psychiatrist's office. Poor Dr. Shelby. I miss him. Why don't they come and bring him back for this?
That's too serious for him.
Yeah.
The building to it.
He's got a Newton's cradle that's click-clacking in the background. And Bliss stares at it. And it stops.
When it stops, the psychiatrist just goes, moving on. Should that not indicate to him, oh, maybe she's not psychologically damaged, or maybe she is, but also she's, you know, correct. It's not delusions. You just watched
the suspiciously, like, local indie wrestler psychiatrist as well.
Oh, good. That was distracting me. I'm waking here. Right there. But surely that event should have made him realise, hang on, maybe she's not deluded.
Different gravy, this.
You are different gravy. That's the other comment section underneath everything Alexa Bliss does.
So the doctor tells her it's time to heal. He needs to know where exactly Alexa's at right now. And he goes, I want you to watch some
telekinesis.
I was really hoping, is it called Rorschach test?
Yeah.
I thought he was going to do that. That would have been actually creative. Instead, he just went, here's a video, here's a montage of Lily getting torn to pieces.
Imagine that, like, fiend mask, gritty, coming up on the ink blots.
I also like the idea of, like, she clearly suffered some severe psychological damage when this happened. So let's make a montage and play it to her. and then she's you know, getting worked up by watching this video. He says, how does that make you feel? She goes... And she gets a glass and the jug of water and pours it. But she doesn't stop when it's full. It pours all over the floor. She's going to have to clean that up. And she goes, oh, yeah, how does that make you feel? And he says, yeah, not great, to be honest.
At this point, by the way, it is making me feel like my pants are a little too tight. At no point have they derailed from that.
She says, well, I feel dandy. And then she
says, not Tiffany Stratton!
She hoys the glass pitcher across the room. It shatters against the wall. She says, I've got a problem. And she rips pages out of a notebook and smashes up his office. She makes a funny note. She like goes, and smashes a keyboard. Breaks a glass of breaks a vase of flowers and then chucks something after him as he legs it out. And then she says, oh, I'll see you next week. She's crazy.
This, I'm here for this. It was awful. Absolutely awful.
All wonderfully terrible. This
yes.
Week,
yeah. Already one of the worst segments of the year. I like this so much more. We're not out of a pandemic. We're not. But WWE is. So you go back to like a live crowd or something. This... They believed, I think, at the time that this was genuinely a pandemic wrestling solution. We saw plenty of them. Loads of them worked on Wednesdays. So they thought, oh, this is one of ours. Wacky Alexa Bliss. Stuff that we can do in the Thunderdome that we could never do in front of a live crowd. They can't do that in front of the live crowd anymore. So you get vignettes like this. And I love that when it's over, we don't go back to our sad, absolutely trapped in the pandemic lives. We go back to a live crowd and a wrestling show and our colleagues at work getting to talk about it. So I have a lot of time for this. It breaks up the monotony. It's awful. I'm not giving it a shred of credibility. I'm just saying it breaks up the monotony in quite a pleasing way.
One of the things that some people maybe don't listen to regularly, because maybe they're not a fan of it, is our NXT.
I would have made it this far.
The NXT 2.0 previews, because they maybe don't watch that show. It's fair enough. But you should listen to that. You don't have to watch NXT if you don't want to, because we've got games, and this means we can get a game on the Raw preview.
Yes.
Mad stuff she's going to do next week. So I love this in the worst possible way.
Yeah, I just, I also love just the incoming flood of Alexa Bliss stands going, give her an Oscar. It's not even the medium. It's not even the medium for an Oscar, you idiot. Like, they are desperate for her to get Oscar nominated. It's fantastic.
Can't imagine.
I break the rules for telly just once. Just once. It's Alexa.
Right, main event time is the triple threat. Beforehand, Becky Lynch comes down to sort of neg / put over Liv Morgan and Bianca Belair. But she gives a nod to Iggy. Thinks that this fellow Celt might have what it takes to go out and get it. She says anything can happen tonight. All these women have got notions of grandeur. They will be finally the one to overthrow her. It's going to be a battle for the ages. All of them fighting. So one day tell their grandkids that they lost to Becky. And then we got Liv Morgan, Bianca Belair, and Yabba for the right to face Becky Lynch at the Royal Rumble. Yeah, and I really enjoyed this, to be fair. You know, it had tropes, as we often say, of WWE triple threats. I'll hit you slightly with a relatively effective move and you piss off for 2 minutes so we can do a spot. But the stuff they did all together, I thought, really looked great. There was a bit where, you know, Bianca Belair and Liv Morgan are going at it, and then all of a sudden they turn around and get hit with a running crossbody by Yabba. She hit Belair with a Michinoku driver and then slammed Morgan on top of her. We go to a break. We come back. Belair dodges a charge by Doudrop, goes to the top. Morgan flips over Doudrop and Hurricanrana's Belair down to the ground. Then Doudrop kicks Morgan into the bottle and Belair spears Doudrop and they're all down. Belair is put in the rings of Saturn as Doudrop's eliminated out of the ring for a while. She puts Liv Morgan puts Belair in the rings of Saturn and it looks like she can't get out. She's going to have to submit. Belair powers out of it as we often see she does, goes to reverse this, but Morgan counters brilliantly with a code breaker. Doudrop comes in, gets hit with one as well. Doudrop power bombs Morgan though. And Bianca Belair makes the save with a sensational 450 splash that even Becky Lynch on commentary is shown getting impressed by. Belair hits a spine buster on Doudrop and gives Morgan a glam slam on top of her. Belair hits a moonsault on both women. KOD on Morgan. She has got the match won. 1-2. Becky Lynch goes from commentary, gets involved, breaks up the cover, gets chased around ringside by Belair, eventually chucks Bianca Belair over the announce table, and Doudrop seizes the opportunity, banzai drop onto Liv Morgan for the pinfall victory. Becky Lynch very happy with herself. She's dodged Bianca Belair, and she will be facing Doudrop at the Royal Rumble. She offers a handshake to her. twats her across the face, goes to manhandle slam her, but then suddenly realizes she can't do that. And Doudrop shoves Lynch out of the ring and stares her down. She is the number one contender as the show goes off the air.
I thought this was mostly really effective. Mm. But then I would say that because I predicted the finish, because I feel like even they know that all they've got for WrestleMania and Becky Lynch is this Bianca Belair rematch. They want you to have the visual, not of the multiple rematches they had, the triple threats, the tags, but of the singular SummerSlam moment where Becky caught Bianca Belair. She didn't beat her, she caught her. She did beat her. But that's how they're going to want to present that big stadium. Flash forward to another big stadium and Bianca Belair finally getting that match as if she hasn't had other chances before. That's what they're going to want you to receive, and maybe we will, because maybe the match will be great. Maybe Bianca Belair will go back-to-back winning Royal Rumbles, as so few other wrestlers have done. Certainly, that's never happened in the history of the women's Royal Rumble. So there's a lot of stuff that you can build for this, and I like this as an effort to begin that. The triple threat was the best mechanism for it, because you can still have a result, you can still have a finish. And I've wanted to put her over more than I have, because some of the angles have been bad, and the character is pretty terrible. One-dimensional, but it's also pretty terrible. But Doudrop has been, I think, an asset to this division. And this is probably the first time where you've been able to say it without too many caveats. Mm. Liv Morgan looked better here than she did in either of the matches against Becky Lynch. The chemistry between Doudrop and Bianca Belair was more interesting than it had been in their singles matches and in their singles feud. And possibly with a bit of fortune, because the booking, as we talked about at length on the preview yesterday, made no sense. But the fortune of the work being decent made all of this feel quite important. Becky Lynch versus Doudrop is a sort of perfect Royal Rumble title match, archetypal WWE Royal Rumble title match, where you don't foresee a title change, but you foresee quite an interesting pairing that you wouldn't have otherwise thought about on a risk-free stage to do it. Very little to be critical of here, and they've done probably the most effective job they can do at this point of planting the seed for Belair and Lynch for WrestleMania.
I just wish it was Becky Lynch versus Piper Niven, personally, but still.
Well, yeah.
They did a much better job of crafting all of this than I thought possible, but my niggling suspicions, I think, are still valid that I spoke of on the preview yesterday, like Becky Lynch against Doudrop. Like, at least Liv Morgan's got like a really loyal online following. I'm not saying that people don't like Doudrop and recognise that the booking is nowhere near as good as the performer, etc. Becky Lynch is going to have to do a gigantic, massive job of trying to get Doudrop over. Is anything remotely being a heel? It's just an odd one to do. I don't hate it in theory for everything Hamflet says. I feel like they've missed a trick in recent years by not doing, let's get that mid-carder 15 minutes with a main event or Royal Rumble, because the match itself was the draw. Like, I missed that, so I am glad that that's back, as Hamflet pointed out. Yeah, the match was solid. Usually I use that as a border solid now, but given the curve that I had this at in terms of the preview, I thought it was really quite strong. Look, the main thing here was advance the story between Bianca Belair and Becky Lynch and make Bianca Belair look great, and that goddamn aerial was just stunning. Yeah. So I think it did way more than it had any right to do.
Yeah, you're right. I was pleasantly surprised by this match. Not surprised too much by the outcome. But yeah, excited to see where they go next with this. Also really intrigued to see what rating this gets, because I saw the number that SmackDown did this morning from Friday night, of course. And yeah, I mean, I would assume that is Brock Lesnar related. So as well as the return, of course, of Roman Reigns. So we'll have to keep an eye out for that one. But let us know your thoughts on everything we've discussed on Men in Our Hour on Twitter at WhatCultureWWE. Watch that. You can follow all three of us. You can follow Michael Hamflet at
Michael Hamflet.
Follow Michael Sidgwick at
M. Sidgwick.
Follow me at Adam Wilborn. Follow us all at WhatCultureWWE. And make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts. As I said, myself and the Dally Boys back later on for the NXT 2.0 preview. And also, like Chase Austin did, thank you once again, Chase, you can suggest something short, crap, and wrestling related by leaving us a 5-star review on iTunes and on Spotify and in my email, adam.wilborn@whatculture.com. But for now, this has been the Raw Review. My thanks to the Dudley Boys. Thank you for joining us, and we will see you soon.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.